Oh, good morning to you all. Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to what is going to have to be the fastest growing segment of our society, or we're not going to have a society for very much longer. This program is for those of you who, like me, have come to know that there's something dreadfully wrong, extraordinarily troubling, even destructive, about the religious and political institutions of this country, in fact, of the West in general, about media reporting, the military invasions, pending and past, as well as troubled and twisted economic schemes. We've come to realize that these institutions are the problem. They are not the solution. You can't reshuffle the deck chairs here on this sinking Dreamliner and expect a different result. So instead of merely presenting the news, our mission will be to understand what is behind all of the tragedies that are besieging our planet, while at the same time encouraging good people to stand up and make a difference so that these events do not influence their lives. And that is why during our second hour, we're going to turn to Yahweh. We're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides hope, the only reliable response in what has become an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number is toll-free for any of you who would like to wield words wisely. We don't advocate violence on this program. We don't tolerate any racism on this program. Righteous indignation is okay. Hatred is not. But if you'd like to express your opinions or comment on anything that is said over the next 2 hours, we encourage you to do so. Toll-free, 877-376-45. We're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has condemned what he termed the moral obscenity of the Syrian government's use of chemical weapons against its own people. He said footage of the alleged chemical weapons attack near Damascus was real and compelling and undeniable. So, Mr. Kerry, I have a question for you. If killing 300 people, might have been 500, with chemical weapons, which is a painless way to die. It's no good way to die, but it is about as painless as there is in terms of a way to die. If killing 300 to 500 people using chemical weapons is a moral obscenity, then why is sawing off someone's head, which the Mujahideen that you were going to support by your military intervention, why is that not a moral obscenity? Why isn't sawing off someone's head, having them drowned in their own blood, not a moral obscenity, Mr. Kerry? Why is suicide bombings, where the victims are mutilated and slowly bleed to death, not a moral obscenity, since that's the primary weapon of those that you would be supporting, Mr. Kerry, if you intervened in Syria militarily? Why is that not a moral obscenity? Mr. Kerry, can you explain to me how it is not a moral obscenity for America to have firebombed Dresden, Germany in World War II, killing tens of thousands of families in their homes as they slept? Perhaps you could explain to me, Mr. Kerry, how it is a moral obscenity to kill 300 people with chemical weapons, and it was not a moral obscenity to drop nuclear bombs on civilian targets, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Please tell me. Tell me how it is appropriate for America to send cruise missiles to rain down on civilians in foreign countries, killing them, but it's inappropriate for those same like-minded people to fly planes into our buildings. Why, Mr. Secretary, would we be responding to 300 deaths in the midst of a war where savages are savaging and ravaging savages, that is a proxy war between Shia and Sunni Islam, when you're dealing with 0.3% of the fatalities, why would you focus on 0.3% of the fatalities and make that your red line? What sense is that? Why would you call obscene the country that you claim killed 300 people with chemical weapons, and you don't call obscene the jihadists that you would support, that you would empower by this invasion, by these bombings, when they tear out the heart of an enemy and eat it? Why is it, Mr. Kerry, that you don't speak of the obscenity of the gang rapes by the hundreds of thousands that are being perpetrated in Syria? If this is so horrible, Mr. Kerry, why don't you apologize for what you did to Iraq? 71 people were murdered today by a suicide bombing. But I suppose that a suicide bombing is not a red line. That's not obscene from your point of view, is it, Mr. Kerry? We failed miserably in Afghanistan. We made a bad situation worse. We broke the country, and everything that we have touched there, we have made worse. We broke Iraq. We invaded a country which led to the deaths of 1 million people. We squandered $6 trillion. We wasted 10,000 American lives, making a very bad situation much, much worse in every possible way, led to this conflict in Syria. And you don't want to call that obscene, Mr. Kerry? What's wrong with us?
Why is the violence in Syria obscene, but yet the violence in Chicago or what's going on in Detroit, why is that not something that's considered more obscene?
Yeah. Why do we tolerate gang warfare over drugs? Because we have made drugs illegal, and therefore there is this monetary incentive to be a gangbanger in these cities. But that's not obscene. Why don't we focus on our own problems? When we have done nothing but fail in everything we've attempted in the Islamic world, why would we engage again? What's wrong with us? You know, if we have this sense of moral outrage, if we sense that, you know, we need to protect defenseless people, that we're not bankrupt, and therefore we have the ability and the desire to be the good deed doers of the world, why didn't we engage to protect 2.5 million Sudanese when their Islamic government was systematically perpetrating genocide against them? Why didn't we intervene, Mr. Kerry, to spare 2.5 million people? And now you want to deploy the U.S. military for 300? What on earth is wrong with us? Can't we learn anything? I mean, I understand we learned nothing from Vietnam, that we invaded Vietnam based on a lie, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a ruse that did not occur, and that we knew that we had no chance to prevail within a year of that battle. At the time, we had lost less than 5,000 Americans, and yet we continued to engage so that we lost over 60,000 Americans for nothing. Now, I understand that that was 30 or 40 years ago, so our memories are really foggy. But you engaged in that war, John Kerry. But for the rest of us, we witnessed Afghanistan, we witnessed Iraq, we know that they were absolute disasters. We witnessed what happened in Libya, where America decided to bomb a regime out of existence, empowering the Mujahideen to turn that into a terror state. What on earth is wrong with us? What? We tried to impose democracy in Afghanistan, it failed. We tried to impose democracy in Iraq, it led to a civil war. We tried to impose democracy in Egypt. It led to a military coup. We tried to impose democracy in Libya. It led to the formation of a terrorist state. When do we recognize that our strategy is wholly wrong? utterly immoral, grotesquely ineffective. And make no mistake, this posturing that the president is trying to decide and that we're trying to evaluate the evidence and we're trying to affirm, you know, who did what to whom, it's all a lie. It's a lie for two reasons. One is just as in the case of Iraq, where President Bush wanted to be a wartime president, and so he wanted a justification for invading Iraq. And every single thing the man said, all of the proof that he postured in his State of the Union address, and then he had his Secretary of State present to the United Nations before the eyes of the world, all of it was a lie, every bit of it. And so now we're supposed to believe them when they say, oh yeah, Assad was moronic. He had won the war. And so what he decided to do was commit an act of suicide to kill 300 people with some chemical weapons. And we're supposed to believe them? They have no credibility. And as for trying to decide what to do in this case, that isn't the case either. America's stores of weapons, of bombs, of cruise missiles, and all manner of ordnance are being loaded onto ships as we speak, in harbors all across this country. They're being steamed as fast as our boats will carry them to the Mediterranean. We've sent our warships. The only thing that is being delayed is it takes a few days to get the men and material there to commit mass murder. Shock and awe is what we call it. The decision has already been made. In fact, in a council that took place in Turkey 2 days ago, we brought in the leaders of the al-Nusra Front and the terrorists that are fighting against the Assad regime. And we told them to be ready to take power because we told them that we were going to start bombing. We've already made the announcement to the terrorists that we're on the side of the jihadists, and they better be ready to take control. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I want you to consider a couple of three other things regarding Syria. How would you feel if America was divided between Christians and all other religions, and that the Europeans decided that they were going to arm the Christians to go off and kill everybody of any other religion, and that that here you are in your country, and foreign countries decided that the smart thing to do was to provide powerful weapons, anti-tank weapons, surface-to-air missiles, automatic machine guns, assault weapons of all kinds, and that these weapons would be poured into your country with instructions from religious leaders that it was your religious duty to go off and kill everyone who was not of the same religion. How would you feel if you were an American? Well, that's exactly what happened in Syria. Yeah, the Sunnis from Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait and other countries in the Islamic world decided that they didn't like the influence that Iran had as a result of the United States giving Iraq to Iran. And so they decided on behalf of the Sunni-Shia conflict that they would weaponize this conflict, and they flooded all manner of weapons into Syria to start a civil war in Syria. Now, how was that not obscene? How do you expect the government in Syria to respond to that? How would you expect the United States government to respond to that? Yesterday, actually it was this morning, 71 people were killed, 201 people were wounded in a series of suicide bombings across Iraq, all because of the United States invasion. 1,000 people were murdered last month. 6,000 have been murdered from suicide bombers this year alone. 6,000. We're talking about 20 times the number. that were killed in Syria? Where is the moral outrage for that? You know, in Kabul, Afghanistan, and these, by the way, in Iraq, it's the exact same people that we are supporting in Syria with our planned military invasion that conducted the suicide bombings of the markets and of the restaurants, killing innocent civilians. In Afghanistan, we found the bodies of 12 civilians. Six of them were kidnapped. They were aid workers providing assistance to the Afghani people. It was the International Rescue Committee. Six of their civilian employees were kidnapped, and then they were murdered. 12 people in total. Same exact people that did that are the folks that we are aiding and abetting in Syria. The Taliban is a major source of mujahideen for the Syrian conflict. Where's the moral outrage for that? Lastly, the United States is the country that provided Saddam Hussein with his chemical and biological weapons capability. We provided that capability for him because he was the enemy of Iran, and we thought it would be appropriate to give him that capability against Iran. So when the United States spoke of the fact that he once had these weapons, we knew we designed them for him. At the time, Syria was an ally of Iraq. Now, all of the chemical and biological weapons that are in the stockpiles of Syria today, they were all sold to the Syrian regime by European companies. They all, 100% of them, came from European countries. All of them. And the technology to weaponize them came from Iraq, which was given to Iraq by the United States. There's a consequence for everything that you do. You know, when the United States decided that we wanted to give the Soviet Union a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam, and we decided that we would spend $5 billion providing arms and money to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, came back to bite us. When the United States says, hey, we can get out of Iraq if we weaponize and arm the Sunnis in the Awakening program. And at the time I said, if you do that, you're going to create a civil war in Iraq. And it's going to bubble up into massive killing. And they took those weapons and they weaponized the conflict in Syria. There's a consequence when you do stupid, immoral, obscene things like the United States does around the world. It's a consequence. It comes back to bite you. And the last thing we ought to be doing now is responding in this way, killing and destroying ever more people. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Nick calling in from Wisconsin. And as I understand it, Nick, you have a question on Jehovah's Witnesses. How are you doing this morning, Nick?
I'm doing good.
Good.
How about you?
Well, you know, I'm doing fine. I like the opportunity to be able to publicly proclaim something that is going to be a disaster and to warn people of the consequences of what they're going to do before it happens. You know, so many people, you know, 10 years after we invaded Afghanistan, okay, everybody knows that was a disaster, but I actually said that it was going to be a disaster before we invaded, and I just want to be on record trying to warn people that this move in Syria is ill-fated. It has no chance of success. It's going to make a bad situation worse, and to the degree that righteous indignation is called for, then because of the consequence of this, I mean, a lot of people are going to die. This is going to spill out and affect all of the Middle East, the Muslim world.
People like me, I would rather learn on mistakes that being done, perpetrated by others, but Apparently, U.S. would like to make those mistakes by itself and not to look at the other countries make mistakes,
yep.
like Russia that tried to invade Afghanistan. So, I mean,
right.
I, what I'm saying is there's no such thing as a bad experience. It's just experience, isn't it? Or is it?
Yeah, you know, I think experiences are.
I hope they'll learn from it and maybe will not do something stupid like that anymore.
That's been the point of the first half of the program, you know, years now is that when we don't learn from our mistakes, then our mistakes are just nothing but mistakes. You know, Vietnam was a mistake. If you learn from it, then there's something to be gained from the death of 60,000 Americans. Afghanistan and Iraq were horrible mistakes, but if you learn from them, there's something that can be gained from all of that sacrifice, all of the what was lost. Doesn't make the invasions right, but at least there can be some benefit from them. But we're not willing to learn.
Experience can be lost too. So the new people that come into war, they forget what mistakes was made, and so they tend to repeat them. And so I guess it's just another step in downturn of U.S. And, next generation will learn from the mistakes that have been made by this generation, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you know, there's always that saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. But we've tried this bombing and invasion of Muslim countries over and over again, always with the same result. Why would we expect a different result this time?
Well, the thing is, what I'm trying to say is that we forget that there was no result, so we try again because we don't remember, and that's why.
Yeah, we seem to have forgotten. I think that in the case of Afghanistan and Iraq, everybody with half a brain recognizes that those were terrible choices, that we made bad situations worse in both countries, and we failed. So the fact that it's not being recalled is it's purposeful. We're repressing the truth because we're uncomfortable with the truth. It's not that we've forgotten it. It's just that we want to be in denial of it. That's kind of what religions do, Nick. You know, they put people in a position where they're confronted with the evidence, they're aware of the evidence, but they're in denial because they just won't process it because it isn't pleasing to them.
Speaking of a religion, I have the reason why I called. I came across that Jehovah's Witness that I don't know, trying to argue with me, I suppose, online.
Okay.
she got her dates like completely screwed up.
And yeah.
I'm not sure if maybe she's in denial or maybe she's just confused herself. It doesn't look like she's a professional witness.
Let me speak to that just a moment. The problem with Jehovah's there's a lot of problems with Jehovah's Witness. Now there are benefits and negatives almost with every strain of religion. In the case of the Jehovah's Witnesses, they got a few things right. They recognize that the Torah is still in vogue, and that they therefore incorporate many things into their religion that are consistent with God's teaching. Now, they completely screw up his name, so if you're going to be a witness for someone, you ought to get that person's name right, and there's no aspect of the name that they get right. But their biggest issue has been dates, and that is because they have set dates repeatedly throughout their, and it's a very short existence. I think they were born in the mid-19th century. The religion was conceived then, and it was conceived by a fellow that set dates, and he was a date setter, and he called for a certain time that was going to be the end of the world. I think it was like in the 1950s or 1960s. And when it didn't occur, as he had predicted, about 70% of the Jehovah's Witnesses went AWOL. And they have been struggling to get people to be witnesses, to sign up more Jehovah's Witnesses, because they lost all of the original Jehovah's Witnesses over their false claims.
Could you tell me, I mean, she's got some dates on, she's saying when the Bible was written, and then she's telling me when the Torah was written.
Okay, what did she say the Torah was written?
Torah was written 4th century before the...
okay, 4th century BCE, before the Common Era.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not, that's not possible. That would have the Torah being written by Adam and Chawa. That would have the Torah being written in the Garden of Eden. Now the Torah was written at the on Shavua, which was the 50th day following the Exodus from Egypt, and it was written by Moshe, dictation from Yahweh, on Mount Horeb in what is now Western Arabia. That occurred around 1450 BCE, so that would be 3,400 years ago. The timing of the Exodus is so easy to establish.
BCE before
the Common Era, BCE. BCE means before the Common Era. So 3,400 years ago is when the... now, the Torah existed prior to that, but it was oral teaching from Yahweh. The codified written Torah was written 3,400 years ago would be the timing. So that's the answer to the second. There is no Bible. Bible is the name of a pagan sun goddess. And so the rest of the books of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms were written such that it appears that the first actually written was the book of Job. We don't really have a date for it, but it has to be right around, we think contemporaneous with the life of Abraham. And so it's probably the first book. And then the Torah, 1450 BCE. And then the prophets began... all the way from a little more than 1,100 BCE, all the way through about 500 BCE. The last of the prophets was about 500 BCE, and the first of them about 1,100 BCE. And so that was the period of time that those books were written.
Well, what
and
I'm trying to argue on there online mm-hmm. is... I brought it to the light that that Hebrew was created first, a Hebrew language, it's the oldest and the oldest papers that we can find out there written is using Hebrew alphabet.
Yeah. Let me give you some background for that. Factual evidence of an alphabet is a cup that was found in Yisrael. It's the first rendition of Hebrew is the inscription. It's the first time that an alphabet was used. We think that there was the use of Sanskrit, which is not an alphabet, about the same time in Mesopotamia. But in terms of an actual alphabet, in fact, the word alphabet is based upon Aleph and Beth, the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet. But it is the first written alphabet is definitely Hebrew. The reason I say that Hebrew was the first language spoken by humankind is because Yahweh spoke Hebrew to Adam and Chawa. And so this is the first time that man's communicating with God, and first evidence that we have of a spoken language, and it's Hebrew. So that's the evidence for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, it's also interesting, by the way, that if you look at language, you know, written history and evidence of language and of communities all dates to right around to the time about 6,000 years ago, to about 4,000 BCE, which is consistent with God having man with a nesama, with a conscience, with the ability to reason, exit the garden. And it's at that time that we find evidence throughout the Mesopotamian area down the Tigris and Euphrates River of communities and of written communication. So it's all very consistent with the timeline that Yahweh provides.
And one more question from myself. You know, they you said they got some of it right because they had Torah in. Well, I guess every old religion has a little bit of Torah in there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, now, Islam is a corruption of the Torah. Christianity is a corruption of it. You know, so they all base themselves on the Torah, and then they contradict it in every imaginable way.
So, what they call themselves a Jehovah Witness,
right?
So the name that comes from they call the God name Jehovah.
Yeah, so there's no basis for that.
When I have been writing. Something out from myself, posting somewhere, and something about Yahweh too. I wanted to see what is Yahweh. Oh, I think I was doing it on your forum, on one of your forums, actually.
Okay.
I have one of the sayings, something I was saying from.
Okay.
And I'll explain it after the break.
Okay, we'll have to. Okay, we'll speak of the basis of Yahweh and why we know how God's name is pronounced, how it's obvious how His name is pronounced, and why Jehovah is absolutely wrong after the break. But Shatterimus, I'm your host, Yada. We have Nick on the line, and he wanted to speak of both Yahweh and of Jehovah to. Share some experience that he had related to the presentation of both names.
If someone illiterate, not educated, would take the name Yahweh and would try to read it in English,
yes,
it might sound as Jehovah in Russian. If I wouldn't, for example, know that first letter Y. I mean, I could simply mistaken that for J, and that's it. It would be Jehovah to me.
Yes, almost any name, anything can be corrupted if you don't know how to pronounce the letters.
So
a W in Hebrew is an O. It's not a V. So there is no V, and you got a V in Jehovah. There is no J, and in fact, there was no J in ancient language. The first J was invented in the 17th century. You got the first letter wrong, and you got the middle letter wrong.
So is Jesus is a wrong name.
That's correct.
Not existent except
that's right.
Except
correct.
In the Russian version of a Bible, it's not Jesus, it's Esau, Isus.
It would be a transliteration of Esau, which is the person that God called out and says, "I hate him." So that's one of the problems of that's a derivative of Arabic and the Quran, where Muhammad was so stupid that he bought into this this notion that Yahusha was really Esau and wrote Esau in his he didn't write, but he spoke his Quran revelation as Esau and corrupted the name, and therefore there's a lot of places around the world that now carry Esau as if it were correct when it's a Quran misstatement.
I also heard you saying something about Jesus. Jesus?
Jesus or Jesus, depending on how you pronounce the G, was the savior of the Druid religion. So the first basis of Jesus, and it was actually from the G, because the J did not exist. So the first use of Jesus, which was and the G and the H were pronounced differently and similarly in various languages, and still are to this day. That the first use of Jesus with this G was in the Druid religion. Jesus was the savior of the Druid religion, where the horned one is considered to be God. And so it was in the the beginning of Anglo-Saxon as a language in the France and Britain, where the basis of the name that we see in our English Bibles, Jesus, actually began.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that when you read it from the Russian point of view, the W and V, it would read as a V in Russian.
Right.
So,
right.
And even now, once in a while, someone gets the word, the name, the Yahweh's name, almost right, except they put that H in the back of the Russian word. So it's not Yahweh, it's Yahweh.
Yeah, yeah, and that's and yeah, and there are languages that have a hard and a soft H. That's one of the reasons why you don't see Yahweh's name actually written out in any of the first, second, or third centuries manuscripts that are Greek eyewitness accounts that found their way into books now known as Yahuchanan or Matan Yahu, Matthew or John, is because it's impossible to use the Greek alphabet to correctly convey the sounds in Yahweh's name. And it is not impossible in English. Now, in English, though, I do, like when I write to Yahweh, I include the W, for example, to show where the O sound is coming from. But the W is not pronounced. And the H in the name, the H is not pronounced because the H is the vowel ah. So it's Yahuwah, where the H supplies the ah sound and the W pronounce, supplies the O sound. And so it's just a matter of showing the letters, that represent, that are in the Hebrew and then conveying their sound in English. And the same thing would be true in Russian. And if Russian doesn't have a soft H, then you just have the ah sound at the end without the H. That's why transliteration, Nick, there is no such thing as right or wrong in transliteration. All you're trying to do is replicate the sound as accurately as possible using the alphabet of the other language. We'll be back with Shattering This after the commercial break.